Hi, everyone. I am John Pittman, and this is The Real Rewind, where we take a look back at some of our favorite movies growing up. And this first season of The Real Rewind, we have been looking at Disney remakes and comparing them with their respected classics. And on this episode, we're going to be looking at the 1949 Mighty Joe Young compared with the 1998 Disney remake, Mighty Joe Young. Now, you may be asking yourself, wait a minute, Mighty Joe Young wasn't made by Disney in 1949? Well, you'd be absolutely right in that. RKO Radio Productions made Mighty Joe Young in 1949, but RKO Radio Productions is also affiliated with Disney by helping him distribute movies such as Snow White, Pinocchio, Bambi, Dumbo, and a lot of his earlier stuff. So with that, I'm going to make an exception and review these two movies. Another reason why I'm reviewing these movies is its use of special effects on Joe. In 1949, it's obvious that Joe is a stop-motion character, whereas in 1998, it's someone in a gorilla suit and them using a bunch of camera tricks to make him large in size. An important thing to note about Mighty Joe Young is that this is Ray Harryhausen's first movie that he worked on for special effects. Who's Ray Harryhausen? Ray Harryhausen is best known for the stop-motion special effects for movies such as Jason and the Argonauts, Clash of the Titans, Sinbad and the Wonderful Adventures, and many other stop-motion creatures. The movie Mighty Joe Young is considered the third in a trilogy of gorilla movies that RKO Productions had been distributing. There was King Kong, Son of Kong, and Mighty Joe Young. Although Mighty Joe Young has no affiliation with Kong whatsoever. As I mentioned, Ray Harryhausen did the special effects for Mighty Joe Young. And even though Mighty Joe Young is considered the third movie in the Kong series, Ray Harryhausen didn't work on King Kong or Son of Kong. But we do see a familiar face from these movies. Robert Armstrong plays Max O'Hara in Mighty Joe Young. He played Carl Denham in both King Kong and Son of Kong. Max O'Hara is a restaurant owner who puts on dinner and a show in New York City, and he wants his restaurant to be the biggest thing, so he's starting to theme his entire restaurant. But in order to do so and become inspired, he wants to go to Africa. In fact, you hear a lot of characters in Mighty Joe Young say, "I want to go to Africa. Let's go to Africa. I'll be inspired in Africa," as if Africa were a country, not a continent. They're not saying specifically where in Africa they're going. They just want to go to Africa. So the movie opens up. We see a little girl named Jill who's living on a farm somewhere in Africa, and she sees a couple people that she normally trades with. And they're carrying this basket, and she looks inside and she sees a baby gorilla, someone she can play with, someone that's like a brother or a pet to her. So she trades a jack-in-the-box, a necklace, a coin, and a flashlight for this monkey that she names Joe. When the dad comes home, he says to Jill, well, we can't keep him, but they wind up keeping him anyway. And Joe grows to be an enormous-sized gorilla. There's no explanation as to why. Joe just becomes huge, roughly 10 to 15 feet tall. King Kong stood at 20 to 30 feet tall in comparison, so it's 15 years go by, and this is where we get introduced to Max O'Hara and his little expedition to Africa. And what he's doing is that he's rounding up some exotic animals for his restaurant, one of them being a lion. As they're getting ready to leave with all these animals, Joe makes an appearance, and it seems that he's attacking the people who are shipping all these animals, when in reality, Joe is trying to break the cage that the lion is in and free the lion. But what I thought was really cool about this scene is that it's 1949, and I couldn't make what was a special effect and what was real. Nowadays, when we watch a movie, we have an obvious, oh, that's computer animated. Oh, that's computer animated. Oh, that's real. Oh, that's just another CGI. And it kind of takes away from the storytelling a little bit. Whereas in 1949, I'm asking myself, whoa, how do they do that? What is stop motion? What is real? Obviously, Joe is stop motion, but there's a moment when there's a blend of when Joe breaks the cage and he takes out the lion. At what point does the lion go from being real to stop motion? It's that good a special effects. And one of the reasons why Ray Harryhausen is a master of his craft. After Joe frees the lion, we see a grown-up Jill, played by Terry Moore, try and convince everyone to leave Joe alone. But Max O'Hara has a talk with her and convinces her, hey, fame and fortune await you and Joe over at my restaurant. And whatever this speech does, it convinces Jill to leave Africa, go to New York with Joe, and be part of Max O'Hara's restaurant show. Max O'Hara's restaurant is styled after his expedition with Africa. In fact, the lion that we see is behind like a thick glass cage, and we're able to see the real lion kind of walk back and forth. Now, honestly, that kind of restaurant, who would want to go to that knowing that there is a fierce lion right behind glass while you're eating, and it's in New York? Of course, you know, with animal rights now, they're never going to allow that kind of thing to happen here. But hey, it's 1949. We can get away with it because it was considered acceptable back then. Joe is the main feature, and there seems to be a different theme with him every week. The first time we see him, he's just holding up a piano while Jill is playing the piano. There's another time when they are throwing money up on the stage. And then there's another time where Joe is competing in a game of tug of war with 10 of the strongest men that Max O'Hara could find. And again, this is another one of those sequences where you're watching it and you're going, what is real and what is special effect? How are they getting the rope to tug while the other guys are on the other side? At what point do the other guys become stop motion? It's just a wonderful movie of special effects to watch, and being able to guess when things shift just absolutely blows my mind. The special effects in this movie are top-notch for 1949. Well, things can always be peaceful with a movie with a giant gorilla in it, right? One night in the crowd, there's a group of three guys. They're unnamed, or their names aren't important. It doesn't matter. They decide they want to go see Joe while he's backstage in his cage. And so they sneak backstage, and they decide to give Joe alcohol. Because they're drunk themselves and they're dumb. Why not? They have to move the plot forward somehow. So they give Joe alcohol and he likes what he's drinking, and Joe wants more, but they run out. So Joe breaks out of his cage, he gets frightened, and then he starts going on a rampage, pretty much destroying all of Max O'Hara's restaurant. After the rampage, the authorities now view Joe as a wild animal that has to be put down. Max O'Hara has a change of heart and wants to free Joe and send him back to Africa. Jill feels the same way. And throughout the movie, we see Jill fall in love and that she's really concerned for Joe because this is her lifelong friend that she's had since a kid. And she never really felt right with Joe being the center of attention. So this is her opportunity now to kind of redeem herself by letting this happen to Joe, by sending him back to Africa. So in order to get Joe back to Africa, they have to dodge the authorities, they have to sneak him out in some way, and they have to drive down a road that's really muddy and all that stuff. So there's just so many obstacles in the way. And along the way home, there's an orphanage that is burning to the ground. And what's really interesting, if you're watching Mighty Joe Young on DVD or digital, the color scheme shifts from being in black and white to orange, as if to give off the flames from the orphanage. This is the moment where Joe becomes a hero. He saves two kids from the burning building, and he clings onto this tree that falls over. And fortunately, unlike King Kong and Son of Kong, Joe survives his fall and is sent back to Africa. And everyone lives happily ever after. How about that? A movie where the giant gorilla doesn't die. And that does it for 1949's Mighty Joe Young. And like I said before, the special effects in that movie are just top-notch for 1949. Now, one of my favorite movies of all time is King Kong. And to see the special effects used in that movie be kind of upgraded and handed over to the hands of Ray Harryhausen for Mighty Joe Young and expand on those special effects is just mind-blowing. Now let's move right along to the 1998 Disney remake of Mighty Joe Young. Now there's some big differences between this movie and 1949, but there's some concepts that remain the same, such as Joe being the main attraction to something. In 1949, it was a show and at a restaurant. In 1998, it's at a plantation. It's at a zoo in Southern California. But I would say the main difference in this movie is not necessarily the special effects, it would be the storyline. Because in this remake, we have obvious villains. We have poachers. We have one guy who seeks revenge because his finger and thumb got bitten off by Joe at a young age. The movie begins with a young Jill living on a plantation with her mother, and they're studying the animal life in Africa. Again, they're not really saying where in Africa, but they are making better use of the word home. So instead of saying, we got to get Joe back to Africa, like they did in 1949, now they're saying, we got to get Joe home. One of the things that Jill and Jill's mom and the people that are living in this plantation are doing are protecting the wildlife from poachers. Remember, poachers are the big villain in this movie. The poachers go on a hunting spree one night, and they wind up killing Joe's mom and Jill's mom. This is different from 1949, where we don't get to meet Jill's mother in 1949. In this remake, we don't get to meet Jill's father. He's just raised by mom, and then mom dies in the remake. So we have two moms that die in the remake, Joe and Jill's. 12 years later, Jill is still living on the plantation in Africa, and Joe's out running around somewhere when a wildlife refuge director, played by Bill Paxton, shows up. And all he's doing is just he's looking to take blood from animals, and I guess he's trying to find some way to kind of keep a disease from happening. It's not really said in the movie what he's studying. We just know he doesn't take the animal. He just wants a sample of the animal's blood, and that's about it. So he hires a group of, well, poachers to help him get what he needs for his study. And he comes to find out that these guys kind of aren't on the up and up. They're not really to be trusted. And ultimately, they get attacked by Joe. And there's this big chase scene, and it's great special effects. And of course, we see Joe, who is not stop motion. Again, like I said at the beginning of the video, he's a guy in a gorilla costume. And they use camera tricks and optic illusions to make him huge in size. And at this point, Joe is officially 15 feet tall. At least that's what we're told. Sometimes the height ratio with some things aren't as consistent through the movie, but it's 1998, and they did their best. Bill Paxton's character finds out that these guys that he hired are poachers, and that now that they've seen Joe, they're going to want nothing better than to hunt Joe down and to kill him and keep him. So Jill is convinced by Joe to move off of the plantation and onto the reserve in California. On one condition, Jill is completely in charge of Joe. She has whatever say happens to Joe, with Joe. If she feels that Joe needs to break from people, if not to be displayed anymore, it's her call. She's in charge of Joe. And Bill Paxton's character agrees. Now, throughout the movie, it's confusing whether or not Joe is comfortable on the reserve. We see some scenes where he's sitting down feeling melancholy, and then there's some scenes where he's playful, he's happy. In fact, one scene, there's confusion that happens with one of the workers there where he feels backed into a corner, and Jill shows up, and it looks like Joe's trying to attack him, when in truth, it's a heartwarming moment. Jill tells the guy, hey, just jump out and say you found me. And Jill is just so happy because Joe is playing hide and seek with the workers. He's gotten comfortable enough to want to engage with the people that are taking care of him. There is a love connection that starts brewing between Jill and Bill Paxton's character, whose name is Greg. So Jill and Greg begin to start falling in love with each other. And, of course, now that Joe is on this reserve, he's a big news item, and who would see him on the news but the poachers that killed his mom and killed Jill's mom and wants revenge for Joe biting his fingers off. So these guys come up with some scheme and plan to get Joe and kill him because that's Disney and they're evil. So while they're hosting this big party for welcoming Joe to the reserve, the poachers show up and they just start tormenting Joe with whatever keychains or whatever they use to attract animals or distract them from running to a specific spot where they can be hunted. Joe recognizes the sound and wants to get away with it because it triggers him, and he's then starts going absolutely bananas, pun intended, and bonkers that Jill no longer thinks that Joe is safe on the reserve. So she meets up with this guy who introduces himself as someone who knew her mom. And it turns out, dun dun dun, it's the bad guy. It is the poachers that want to kill Joe. And this guy says, well, I have a reserve somewhere else. We will take Joe, and he'll be completely safe there. He'll have more room to run around, and just give him to me and help you escape with Joe. Greg finds out that the poachers have kidnapped Joe, and while Jill's in the car, she realizes that these guys are poachers. So at some point, the car gets into an accident, Joe escapes, and then we get to see what everyone wants to see in these type of movies, a gorilla go absolutely crazy in a city, right? Climbing buildings and roaring at the top of his lungs and doing some major destruction, damage. Well, the only destruction Joe does in this movie is that he destroys a Mercedes because, I mean, we all can relate to Joe at this moment. The stupid car alarm won't shut off, so he just destroys the car until it stops. Sorry, I got triggered there for a second there. Now, before I go on, think this through with me. The movie is made by Disney in 1998, and it takes place in Southern California, in Anaheim. Where would be the perfect spot in Southern California for Disney to have a big climactic scene? Well, I would think Disneyland. Right? Maybe have Mighty Joe Young climb to the top of the Matterhorn. Maybe have Mighty Joe Young climb on the top of Sleeping Beauty's castle. Maybe have Mighty Joe Young scare some people on the Jungle Cruise. Disney, you had all this potential to use your own marketing for Disneyland, but you didn't do it. Instead, Joe goes to some random carnival in the Palisades and scares people there. Now, much like in 1949, where there's a burning orphanage and Joe has a chance to show others that he's not just a wild animal, that he has feelings and Joe can now be a hero, in the remake, we have the Ferris wheel breakdown and there is a kid trapped at the very top. So Joe has to climb the Ferris wheel and virtually save the day. Of course, the poachers get arrested because it's Disney. Good must prevail. But Joe falls from the Ferris wheel. Saves the kid. And he winds up being alive anyway. Now, the interesting thing about this movie is that the bad guy doesn't get arrested. In fact, the bad guy dies in good old Disney fashion by falling to his death. Well, I'll rephrase. Joe grabs him, holds him over some power lines, and then drops the bad guy onto the power lines. Yeah, people say that some Disney animated deaths are rough. Try Disney live action movies. In the end, because Joe is now safe from the poachers that were originally after him, Jill and Greg decide to send Joe back home, and we all live happily ever after. Yay! Before we move on, there's a couple things I want to mention about the remake. This is one of Regina King's earlier roles, and she plays one of the scientists that works on the preserve. And she has one line in this movie that's kind of a throwaway line, but it explains why Joe is so massive. It has something to do with, like, there's a recessive gene that happens once every fourth or fifth generation, and that is the cause for Joe's massive size. It's a line that's literally said in the car, and if you're not paying attention to the movie, you're going to miss it completely. But does it need to be in there? I mean, can we just accept the fact that Joe's a massive size without a scientific reasoning behind it? Kind of like midichlorians in Star Wars. Does it have to have a science behind the mythology, or can it just have fun with it? And the other thing I got to mention is while they're at the big fancy party for Joe's welcome on the preservation, there's two people in a scene that make a cameo. There's Terry Moore, who looks at Charlize Theron and she goes, "She reminds me of someone, I just don't know who." Well, she's playing your character back in 1949. And the gentleman that's standing next to Terry Moore is Ray Harryhausen. And Ray Harryhausen looks at her and says, "She reminds me of you when you were younger." But come on, you got Ray Harryhausen, who's still alive in 1998, with Terry Moore, and they get that little brief cameo. What a great nod to the original classic. Well done, Disney. Good writing. Well done. Well, that does it for the 1998 Disney remake of Mighty Joe Young. Now we get to ask the burning question, which one was better? Well, as I said before, these two movies are almost the same with a couple tweaks in its concepts, taking Joe from his homeland into America so he can be safer and so he can be put on display. That's the ultimate overall what's happening between these two movies. The main difference that I see in both films is that in the remake, we have an obvious villain, something that Joe can run away from. In the 1949, there's just misunderstandings and miscommunications and how to treat Joe as a wild animal. Do we set him free or do we kill him? Well, obviously they set him free, but that's not what they initially wanted to do. In 1998, they're running away from poachers and they're running away from the authorities because they kind of agree with the poachers in a sense. But, like in both movies, Joe has a redeeming moment where he saves kids, a kid, and we all think he's dead, but he winds up being happy. So which one is better? I'm going to have to call this one a tie. Right, for the first time ever on Real Rewind, we have a tie, and I will explain to you why. In 1949, we have mind-blowing special effects by the legendary Ray Harryhausen. It's his first movie, and like I said, my mind was blown over what was stop motion, what was real, and when it switched, when it happened. And the special effects just are amazing. And comparing it to King Kong and just building up on it, Mighty Joe Young in 1949 was absolutely great. And what I liked about the Mighty Joe Young remake was the villain concept. The fact that we have more investment in Joe and that he's not just being put on a musical display, he's actually at a zoo. That makes more sense to me. And poachers want Joe for evil reasons, whatever. But it makes more sense that Joe has a villain as opposed to just sitting in a cage wallowing and we feel sorry for him. Now we actually fear for him and we can connect with him on another level because he has that villain. I love that aspect of the remake. So that's why, in terms of special effects, I got to give it to Mighty Joe Young in 1949. In terms of story, I got to give it to the remake. But the concepts of both movies are the same. The only make or break thing about it is the pro for 1949 is the special effects, and the pro for the remake is the villain. So the other question I normally ask is, did the remake ruin our childhood? I think Mighty Joe Young in 1949 is not talked about widely like Disney animated classics. We didn't grow up with Mighty Joe Young. It's one of those movies that you study if you start getting into film and the special effects used in the movie. In fact, like if you watch King Kong, then you watch Son of Kong, you watch Mighty Joe Young. And especially if you're a fan of Ray Harryhausen, like me, you want to see how he started and how he's progressed later on. So Mighty Joe Young, I would say, is an art film, not necessarily a children's film. So the question of did it ruin our childhood doesn't apply. That does it for this episode of The Real Rewind. If there's anything you liked, anything you disagree with, or anything I may have missed, please put it in the comments down below. Also, make sure you do that trinity of clicks. Like, share, and subscribe so you don't miss out on another episode of The Real Rewind. Next time, we're going to be looking at Snow White. The remake came out, so I get to review it and compare it with the original classic. Until then, thank y'all, and see you next time on The Real Rewind.